Zal ik even de laptop opsmetten? Let's go. Nee, oké. Okay. Goed, let's go.
Hello everyone, I'm Julius. I'm a student, business psychology and a TEDx organizer.
And I'm Miklas Kok. I'm also a TEDx organizer and I'm a student, economics, law and business administration. And today we have Tommaso Bordoni, the spiritual father of the Taylor company, if I can call it in that way, Bordoni. Welcome, Tommaso.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we mentioned immediately, of course, Bordoni, the tailoring company, and you make tailored suits is then a logical conclusion. A fun question that we thought about is, how do you choose in the morning which suit you're going to wear? Because right here, right now, you're also in a fantastic, wonderful suit today. You mentioned to us before that it is a daily habit of you to wear suits.
Yes.
How do you pick your suit of the day?
Well, honestly, I don't really pick a suit. I just open the closet and take a suit out, and
the suit takes you.
Yeah, the suit picks me. Yeah, you might put it that way. So basically what I do, I open the closet and I take out a shirt, which I have a lot of, in a lot of different colors. I have white ones and I have white ones and I have white ones, and then I pick a suit to match the shirt, and basically every suit works with a white shirt. Sometimes when, for example, this afternoon I spilled some mayonnaise on my suit, on my pants, and so I drove past my house real quick. My girlfriend is working from home, so I just gave her a call to like, hey honey, can you get out a suit for me? I need to come home and change real quick. So I don't really pick my suits. Either she picks them or either I just take the first one out of the closet I see.
Mm. So there are no suits that are actually fit for a kind of situation.
Oh, that's, yeah, obviously there are. But I thought we were talking about on a day-to-day basis.
Okay.
Well, if I have special occasions, I have some special suits. Let's say I'm going to a more fancy event. I'm obviously going to pick something like a double-breasted pinstripe suit. When it's a black tie event, I'm going to wear a tuxedo, stuff like that. But for like the regular day-to-day, I just take any suit.
If you're walking on the street and you see a man in a suit, are there some things nowadays you are really frustrated about that, no, you don't wear a suit in that way, or some people hate a black shirt with a black suit on it?
No, there's a lot of things that frustrate me about suits. So first of all, I don't believe in rules like you shouldn't wear a black suit with a black shirt or anything. The only thing I believe in is... okay. So the only thing I believe in basically is if you're wearing a suit, you shouldn't really care about fashion trends or about what other people might think. You should just wear a suit which suits you. So like, if you like it, it's good. If you love it, it's even better. But you got to make sure it fits. And that bothers me like so often when somebody shakes my hand and like 74% of his hand is covered in his sleeve. Mm. Oh, it gives me shivers. It's horrible. It's literally horrible. Like some basic rules, like when...
there goes the microphone.
Yeah, like some basic rules, like when you're wearing a single-breasted two-button blazer, you only button the top button. You never close the second one. When people do stuff like that, well, yeah, that kind of bothers me. But on the other hand, I'm also the guy who's like, I don't really care. I'm just going to walk over to that random stranger and be like, hey, sorry, can I interrupt you for a second? Like that last button there, unbutton it, please.
why is there then a second button?
Why?
Yeah.
It dates back from when the suits originated. Like that's why you have buttons on the sleeve as well. The reason they're there is basically so you can roll up your sleeves, because back in the days, suits used to belong to the working class, to the farmers, to stuff like that. It's only been somewhere in the 1800s when there was this English politician. And he was like, well, there's a lot more working class people than high class people. So if I would start wearing suits like the working class, I might get more votes. And he did, and he won the elections that way. And since then, a lot of people into politics in England started wearing suits.
And what were they wearing before then?
Funny clothes, like these big jackets with like a million buttons on it. Like, they kind of looked ridiculous, in my opinion, obviously.
And why was it the working class that wore such a thing like suits? Was it for, how did it develop to the typical design that we now today know as well? Is it for practical uses? How it fits?
No, it's just a jacket, basically. It's just a jacket. You have some buttons on the sleeves. So if you unbutton it, which is, by the way, a good tell to see if you're wearing a bespoke suit or an off-the-rack suit. Off-the-rack, most of the time, have fake buttons. But you see, I can unbutton my sleeve now, for example, and I can start working in the garden. So it was just the way it was back then.
Did they also wear already ties?
No.
What's the function of a tie? Yeah.
The function of a tie is to clean up your buttons on your shirt and to have less seams and stuff. It's like decorative. Like, why does a woman wear a big-ass purse with nothing in it? Because it's fancy and it's nice. It's just an accessory, basically. Same thing with a pocket watch. A pocket watch used to be like a stupid simple thing. It was a plain plate, and on the other side you had a watch. And over the years that evolved into like fancier watches with like nice chains, so you can hang it on your waistcoat so people could actually see you were wearing a nice pocket watch. It's just purely decorative, which it still is today.
So there is no difference in between a large tie, which has a white appearance, and the small tie?
There is.
Like you're wearing that right now?
Yeah, obviously. But nowadays, that's just like your sense of your own taste. Like, some people still like white ties. I don't really like white ties because I used to be slimmer than this, but when you're wearing a white tie, you make yourself look even skinnier because the tie is so white. If you're wearing a tiny tie or a skinny tie, it makes you look a little bit buffer because the tie is so tiny. Tiny tie. Cheerio, mate.
I love the fact that we directly dove into the history of suits, right? And obviously, like how the origins of Bordoni can be tracked to your passion for suits from the very beginning. And if I'm not mistaken, because I actually know you from a keynote you gave at AFC, at the Student Startup Forum, if you remember.
Oh, yeah, cool. Yeah, I do remember. Yeah. I did it on my socks.
Really?
Yeah, I took my shoes off.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah,
apparently, right. I was the first guy ever to do a keynote at the University of Leuven not wearing shoes and wearing yellow socks with piñatas on it.
Why was it again that you took them off?
Because I feel more... I'm not wearing those today. I don't think I have them anymore. Because when I get to a customer's house, because I work by appointment only, the first thing I do is I take off my shoes because it relaxes me. It makes me feel at home in their home. And if I'm relaxed, they're relaxed, and we just have a better vibe. And I think it was one of the first big keynotes I had to give, like for the KU Leuven. That's kind of a big deal. And so I was like, well, I'm not at ease. What should I do to ease myself down a little? And I was like, well, let's have a beer. But since that didn't work, I decided like, well, let's just take my shoes off. And as soon as my shoes came off, I was like, yeah, honey, I'm home. And it went pretty well, actually. I believe it went well.
Yeah, it went well. I can confirm that.
Thank you.
Taking the shoes off was to make yourself feel more comfortable, then I guess.
Feel more comfortable.
And also, what I think, there's a lot of happy socks today, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's also being integrated in the part of suits. Like, sometimes it is seen, I think a stigma around suit is that it's very uniform, that it's very boring and always the same for most people. And that the socks give like a hint of creativity. And
yeah, it used to be like this. A lot of suits like were like, okay, I have a suit, I have three suits. And if a guy had three suits, he usually had a a gray one, a blue one, and a black one. And most of the time, that was basically it. But nowadays, people are getting more expressive, and they're. I noticed this trend as well. People are getting more ballsy and buying more like special fabrics. Like a couple of weeks ago, we included new fabrics in our gamma, which have like pinstripes in them, but like made out of 24 karat gold. Like those things, a couple of years ago, it was like, no, that's a big no-no. And now it's like, yeah, okay, let's do this. I never wear happy socks, by the way. I buy all my socks in H&M. They're cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're wearing a suit every day. Do you sometimes get a strange reaction in different kind of situations?
I get no other than strange reactions, especially it depends on the place where I am. When I'm with a customer, for example, he's not going to say, hey, why the fuck are you wearing a suit? That's weird. When I am at a festival or something like that, well, reactions like that do occur. Like if I go to Pukkelpop or Rockwerchter or Tomorrowland or whatever, I think there's an average of around 50 people a day walking up to me and asking me if I just ran away from my wedding or what actually happened. And well, yeah, so I do get a lot of strange reactions. But that's also the reason why I do wear suits in places where you're not supposed to wear them. Like if I go to an old brown bar in the middle of a shady town, I will be wearing a suit. And the reason for that is it gives people a reason to approach me and to start a conversation. Because a suit is always a conversation starter. Like, why the hell are you wearing a suit at this time of night in this place? And then I'm like, well, because I'm a tailor and I do make bespoke suits. And like,
and business card comes in.
And yeah, and then once every now and then somebody's like, no fucking way. Are you kidding me? Right? I'm getting married in 4 months and I still haven't got a suit. I'm like, well, that's why I'm wearing a suit now.
Yeah.
It works.
And so it's a mixture of a statement and a sales point then, I think.
Yeah, and also because I like to wear a suit. I just
even in at festivals, because I've been at festivals, and
yeah,
it's nice to have, especially if you were you staying at the camping as well at Pukkelpop, for example?
No,
okay, yeah.
No,
I can imagine, because you would love to get sweatpants when you're at the camping, because it's so comfy. And then I wonder the comfort part, is it sometimes bothering you, like especially at festivals where you need to move and need to party, and then wearing a suit,
no,
that can be
also the temperature.
The temperature. I'm cold as ice, buddy. Don't worry about me. Yeah. No, but the thing is, for me, it is comfortable. It's like you have these people wearing oversized hoodies and t-shirts. The reason they're doing that is because they feel comfortable in it. I just feel more comfortable wearing a suit. It makes me feel more me, if that makes sense.
How old were you when you bought your when you buy your first suit?
And what was it like?
Okay, so my first suit I got and the first suit I bought, there are two different suits. So the first one I got was just a blazer, una giacca blu, and it was a blazer my grandmother got for me in Italy. So that was the first one, and I've always had a passion for the suit thing, because my grandfather, he was always wearing suits, dressed to impress. It was amazing. And my first suit I actually bought was when I was 14, 15-ish. And I bought two at once. They were hideous. They were both from Siena. And they were both three-piece suits. They were both €99.
What is a three-piece suit?
A three-piece suit, it's a suit pants, it's a blazer, and it's a waistcoat. And they were both €99, and they both had like this herringbone print in it, motif in it. And one was black and shiny, like it was covered in oil. And the other one was just plain silver. It was, it was horrible. Mm-hmm. It really was.
And how old were you?
14, 15-ish.
Because I remember the most people nowadays buy their first suit for their
prom
mm-hmm. No, or for their verbal examinations.
Yeah.
At school. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I never had any of those. So.
another beer.
Yeah,
another beer. You can say that.
Okay, yeah. Hey, Bart, can I have another beer, please?
No, but so I yesterday we had another podcast guest who actually was also in the suit, if you remember.
Yeah. Oh, you when told it, when about it came me, in. Right?
We didn't make the reflex, sorry.
Oh my god, guys,
but now
okay,
we will.
Well,
but
it was
now
nice
we
talking
will.
To you. Have a good evening.
But I immediately changed the room, right? When you have someone walking in.
Yeah, definitely.
It has a charm about it.
Yeah.
And
depends on how you wear it. You don't want to wear it too cocky. You don't want to walk in like you own the place. Unless you're planning on buying the place, obviously. But it sometimes gives... The thing with a suit is it gives people... I might be totally wrong about this, but this is my impression. A suit is something to make people more pleasant. Because if somebody's wearing a suit, they automatically feel more confident and they might have less of an impulse to prove themselves and start to act cocky because they already have the suit. But I might be totally wrong about this. It just popped into my head. And
so how you wear it is as important as what you wear.
Definitely.
Or even if what you wear is not so nice, it improves when you wear it confidently.
Definitely. Yeah.
Don't you think it creates a distance between someone who is wearing a suit and someone who isn't?
Yeah. No, not at all. That's all up to the person who is inside of the suit. Mm. Like, to me, I meet a lot of my customers in bars late at night. And if two guys walk up to me and they start chatting with me, I don't have a possible way to know who the investment banker is and who the homeless guy is. It's like sometimes it's really, really, really hard to tell. So just be kind to everybody and treat everyone with the same kind of respect. And then the barrier of the guy wearing the suit, it just drops away.
Is there something like being overdressed for you? And as a second point, do you agree to the statement, the clothes make the man?
No.
To both of them?
No.
Yeah.
Is there something as being overdressed? Yes, there is. Wearing a tuxedo and patent shoes to a public swimming pool, that's overdressed. Dressing up.
I was thinking about more subtle situations.
Yeah.
Fine.
So there is overdressed, but like it's very hard to overdress, I believe. Like if you look at Lady Gaga's clothes, for the thing she does, I don't think she's ever overdressed. If you would go dressed like that to your parents-in-law, it might be considered overdressed. So overdressed to me, it depends really hard on the situation. And the clothes make the man... No, the clothes can make the man look better, but if the man's an asshole, even with a suit, he's just going to be a better looking asshole. Mm. Mm. Okay. Make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Makes sense.
Thank you.
Yeah. We talked a bit about your first suit experience, right? And I think it's good from that point to maybe track down where the passion began, right?
Yeah.
For you. And do you have like a you woke up one day, or is it a gradual experience? Because it's not a common hobby, right?
No, not at all.
People like wearing... I, for example, liked wearing suits to a prom.
Buy one.
Yeah, I'll consider it, for sure. I thought you were going to tailor me on the spot, but that's maybe in my wildest dreams. But no, but...
I have everything with me here. I have everything in my van. If you want to buy a suit, I'll make you a suit. Yeah, no problem.
But coming back to the to my experience of suits, I really liked it when all of my friends and we went to a pre-drink, and we were like swines, but we were fancy.
Like swines.
But we were dressed fancily, right? And it was a nice atmosphere. How was it? But it never became my passion. And what was for you then the starting point?
To me, the thing was my biggest idol, the person I looked up to the most, was my Italian grandfather. He was a very, very, very big businessman in Italy. He was very strict, but he looked like literally like a million bucks.
Now I imagine like Tony Soprano.
Oh no, way better, way better. He had like this closet. in my eyes, back then, when I was a kid, this closet was about the size of the world times two. It was like humongous. And this was this full-on walk-in closet, and there was nothing in there but brown leather dress shoes. Like Brogues, Oxfords, basically all the same, but he had like hundreds of pairs. And he had this other closet, and it was full of suits. All black or dark blue. So basically, he didn't have much choice. He was always dressed in a suit and always wearing Oxfords or Brogues. And so I looked up to him, and then like you become a kid and you start watching movies or seeing bits from movies, and all the mobsters are wearing suits and all the businessmen, they're wearing suits. And the mobsters and the businessmen are always the only guys in the movies who are making any money. So as a kid, to me, my mom once asked me, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I told her, like, I either want to be a mobster or a businessman. And she was, like, kind of confused and conflicted by that answer, obviously. And she was like, well, why? And apparently I responded to her with, like, because they can go to work in a suit. And so this passion has grown and grown and grown. And then, well, eventually I got my first blazer from my grandmother. It was in Italy. And it just accelerated. And then after a while in school, Bart is here. I don't know if I can say that he's here, but he is.
Sure, sure.
He's on a fair COVID distance, though. But Bart can confirm. I actually went to school in the, how do you call that, high school? The last few years of high school before they kicked me out at SPSA. Thank you, Danny Pels. before he kicked me out, the last few years, I actually started to go to school wearing a suit. He can confirm. And I went all the way. I was wearing a suit. I was wearing a tie. I had like this golden ballpoint pen or fill pen or whatever. And I was like the guy in the suit, and everybody was making fun of me, like, oh, you look ridiculous in your suit. And I was like, well, you might think that. I think I look hella awesome. So I'm fine with you thinking that I look ridiculous. And look now.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah, great. Well, why did you get kicked out? That's interesting for me.
Why did I kicked out? So what did happen? I wasn't the best kid in school. The thing I think I did was, I remember. Maybe that's something we should discuss when we've stopped recording. That's not a good thing to get on tape. I was a naughty little boy. I'm so sorry. Sorry, Danny Pels. I apologize.
Do you have a mission with your company? Like, do you really want to see everyone wearing a suit one day? Or is that not your mission?
No, I don't want to see everyone wearing a suit. I do have some missions with my company. First of all, I want to get some manners back into people. I've been dating my girlfriend for about a year and a half now. She goes with me to a lot of places. We've been to Africa. We've been to England. Like, we go to London every month. We've been in Italy. I do a lot of foreign customers as well, and she always joins me in the weekends if she's free. She always joins me, and I always drive. She has never, ever, ever since the day she met me, touched the door handle of my car. I feel like things like that. That's like the first mission, like bring the modern gentleman back into the world. Like, first of all, I don't care if you wear a suit or not. I do care if it's raining and you don't stop at a pedestrian crossover to let an old lady walk over first. Like, stuff like that. People need to be kinder again. And then the business mission is, yeah, obviously I want to conquer the world. I want Bordoni to be a household name in every single country, everywhere you go.
That's a very honest mission. But you were saying you want to put manners back into society. Actually,
manners make it.
I'm thinking about the Kingsman films and really love them.
Right?
Where did it go wrong?
Where did it go wrong? I don't know. Guessing somewhere in the 90s, somewhere around there. No, where did it go wrong? I don't know. I think where did it go wrong? I think the question should be, why is it going wrong? Because it's still going wrong. Like, it, the thing is, like, if you say this to people, where it goes wrong is that they don't spread the message enough. Like, if you hear somebody say, like, you should be kinder for each other, you should open the door for a lady, you should not split the bill, but you should take turns in paying, stuff like that, people tend to have a reflex where they go like, oh, well, that's right, maybe I should do that. And they might actually do that. But the reflex should be, well, that's right, I should do that, and maybe I should pass it on to my peers, to other people I know. And next time you see your best friend getting into the car when his girlfriend is still walking behind him, you could just tell him subtle when she's not around, like, listen, buddy, if the next time you go by her side first, you wait and you open the door for her, that's such a small gesture, you're going to lose 7 seconds of your life. But trust me, you're going to have a way better night. It's like the devil is in the details, guys. Definitely.
Yeah. Some girls wouldn't like it these days if you did that, right? That's, well, maybe also, yeah, something to
the
take into account.
Exception makes a rule, right? Yeah, well. Okay. Yeah, of course. Some girls don't like it. Yeah. But, like, most people in general like it. When I'm walking into a bar with a friend of mine, I do like it when he holds the door of the bar open for me until I'm in. I'm not going to be like, I'm my own man and I can open my own door to this bar. No, yeah, man.
It's just
for
a common courtesy. What is disappearing right now?
What?
It's just a common courtesy.
Yeah.
Some rules, some small rules in life that are like disappearing.
Yeah, it's like people are getting lazy as well. Like, when, let's say you're sleeping over at a friend's house and you wake up before him and you have to go. Clean up your mess. If he gave you a blanket, fold it up. Make it easy for him to just put it away. Don't let him do everything. Like, show some gratitude. People don't do that anymore.
Do you think there is a correlation between the price of a suit and the appearance of a suit?
Definitely. Definitely, the appearance and the feel, especially. In my car, I have a book. I have a lot of books. And one of the books in my car, it's a sample book of vicuña wool. Do you know vicuña? It lives in Peru. It's like sort of alpaca kind of animal. And it's insanely expensive. If you buy a suit made out of vicuña wool, you're probably going to lose around, let's say, 60,000 euros, which to most people is a vehicle. If I make you a suit out of full polyester, it will cost you about 200 euros, which we don't do, obviously. We don't work with polyester. What's the difference going to be? The polyester is going to look horrible because the fit is never going to be nice because the fabric doesn't flow like it should. And it's going to feel rough. On the other hand, it's going to last forever. The vicuña is not going to last forever, but it's going to be the softest thing you've ever felt. And it's going to look way, 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 way nicer.
What's the price range of a Bordoni suit?
800 euros to unlimited.
Yeah.
Because previous year it was up to 2,350 euros, you said somewhere on the...
It still is. You listened very well. When did I say that?
Jungle Wolfen.
Yeah, at the TV show.
Okay, so indeed. So basically the price range is 814 up to 2,343, something, let's say 2,400, something like that. That's our general price range. And within that price range, we have a suit for everyone. But obviously, besides the regular suits, we also have, some fabrics, for example, with diamond dust sprinkled in. Like, you can go for one of those, but those are going to set you back an easy 6,000. You can go for 24 karat gold in your suit. Those are going to set you back at 15,000. You can go as crazy as you want, basically. That's the thing about tailored suits and bespoke suits. Everything's possible. if you go like, I want to have a drawing of my mother on the inside of my blazer encrusted in diamonds. Yeah, buddy, no we problem, but yeah. It's going to cost, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So everything's possible, but the regular suits, which aren't really regular either because they're also bespoke suits, but like the non-crazy fabrics, let's say 800 to 2400.
Okay. You have a very sales-driven approach in your business,
yes,
I feel, right?
I do.
You also in here, a few things you said is recognized that it is done with a little bit of thought for how can I get to the people? How can I make my brand visible? Do you have like some experience you want to share in the best practices of sales and how you developed a vision for that,
yeah,
and how to approach it
I'm
in the best
way.
I'm
born with it.
You're born with it. Yeah.
Sales is the most easy thing in the world if you know how to do it. And there's millions of training ships and whatever which are going to cost you thousands of dollars, and they're not going to work. There's one thing you need to know, and I'll give it to you for free if you give me another beer later. And that's a quote I came up with, I think, like 7 years ago. And it's the only rule in sales, and it's the most important one. Open the client before you open the book. And if you hear it, it might not make sense at first, but if you think about it, I'm trying to sell you something. It doesn't matter what I'm selling. You don't want it. And why don't you want it? Because I'm a sales guy. And nobody likes to buy anything from a sales guy. You're going to buy from a friend way easier. That's my approach, at least. So open the client before you open the book. Before you start selling, don't sell. Let the customer buy. So before you start selling your product, get to know your customer, have a little chat with him, talk about his life, talk about what he does. But the thing is, you can't fake this. You genuinely have to be interested in what they have to say, because otherwise they will notice it's just a pitch. But if you're genuinely interested and you can create a genuine bond with your customer, you won't have to sell anything because they will ask you to buy. I've never, ever, ever since I started this company sold a shirt to a customer who bought a suit. Never. But 90% of my customers ask me if they also can buy some shirts with their suits.
Yeah.
You don't need to sell it. You don't have to be like, oh, by the way, we have these amazing suits. We only use Egyptian cotton. It's the best fabric. We have this poplin twill. It's so no. Just be you, create a relationship, and if the customer trusts you, he will buy on his own.
Yeah, it's not here's why you need a suit. It's asking, why do you need a suit? Is that, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, what do you need? Maybe you don't even need a suit.
Yeah.
Maybe you need something else.
Is there like a client you are very proud of? Maybe that's not so the meaning to tell this here, right here. But have you ever had a client, you saw him on TV or somewhere, and you're very proud that he was wearing your suit?
Yeah, obviously, the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
He knew that what answer was coming, right?
Or you didn't know?
Actually,
right?
I didn't know. No.
You didn't know?
Okay.
So, Leonardo DiCaprio?
No. The real Wolf of Wall
the real
Street.
Wolf.
Jordan Belfort, who's a close friend of mine now. His wife is by now one of the best friends of my girlfriend. And he's a good customer of mine. And yeah, obviously, I'm proud to be Jordan's tailor. Even though he was, Jordan, if you're hearing this, we all know this, you're kind of a douchebag, but I love you. But the thing is, yeah, obviously, he's an international guy. There's also some other big customers who I can't discuss. But yeah, there's a lot. Like, basically, the suit I enjoy making the most is not for a guy who's famous or rich or wealthy, like... There's very wealthy customers who place like $50,000 or euros orders. Those are good for the company, obviously. But the ones that give me actual pride is people like you and me who are getting married. Because as a tailor, it's still a special thing when somebody who doesn't know you asks you to make his clothes for what probably is one of the most important days of his life. That's a big deal to me. Like when somebody is going to make a commitment that crazy and he wants to be wearing something that we've made for him. Yeah, guys.
Will you design your own suit for your marriage?
Where the hell should I get it otherwise? Obviously, I will.
Already have something in mind?
No, not at all. My girlfriend knows this, that within this and the next couple of days or weeks or months or let's say 2 year stops, I'm going to propose to her. And I'm not really worried about...
That's a broad range.
Yeah, that's a broad range. I want to confuse her a little bit. Hey, honey. The thing is, I'm not so worried about proposing to her. I'm more worried about the suit I'll have to wear on my wedding day. Yeah, yeah. Because I'll have to wear something that nobody has ever seen me in. Which is going to be...
The roles will be reversed. There will be more time spent, yeah, not on the wedding dress, but on the suit.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of a challenge on what should I wear. Maybe I should just go in jeans and a t-shirt and confuse everyone.
Mm. Yeah, because you're actually right now also selling other kind of clothes.
Yeah, so when I founded the company Bordoni, I only did suits. And after a while, I expanded and I also started making shirts. And now, since a couple of months ago, we expanded to jeans as well. So bespoke jeans and shoes as well. So all custom made, handmade. So you pick every detail yourself. That's what makes our company very sustainable, actually, because we never have overstock. We don't create anything we don't sell because we only create it after we've sold it. So we sell your suit and then we make it and then we're sure it's not getting tossed away or anything. And so starting from January next year, 2021, we're gonna start making like cashmere sweaters, t-shirts, stuff like that. But also according to the Bordoni principle, you pick your fabric, we take your measurements, you pick where you want your initials embroidered, in which font you want it, stuff like that. So it's going to be bespoke t-shirts and bespoke v-necks and stuff like that.
So let's say I'm a customer. How does it work? You come to my house, you personally or someone else?
So either me personally or somebody in sales. But for the moment, I still visit all the customers myself. Or I try to, but since we participated in this Young Wolves show, it's getting quite impossible because the demand is just insanely high. So at the moment, we're actually looking for people in sales to extend the company. Mm. And how it works, we make an appointment that can be at your house, that can be in my office, that can be in your favorite bar. It can be basically anywhere you want. And then we sit down together, we have a little chat, we get to know each other, and then we start looking what you're looking for, what do you need? You need a suit, what is the occasion, what do you wear?
Is there also some advice involved?
Yeah, obviously, because there's a lot of people who when they're buying a suit, like especially with people who are getting married, sometimes it's the first time they ever buy a suit, or at least a bespoke suit. And a lot of them don't have a clue what they need or what they're looking for. And yeah, obviously we advise them.
So you have Italian roots. You told us your grandfather is Italian.
Yes.
Do you think there is a link? Why are Italians always so well dressed?
Oh, buddy, that's a big misconception. They aren't. They're only well dressed in the movies. Have you been to Italy lately?
Yeah, I have been in the northern part of Italy.
Yeah. Have you seen anybody well dressed? Honestly?
I don't know.
No, you haven't. No, in the movies, in the old movies, they're all well dressed.
Yeah, but there are a lot of fashion brands originated in Italy.
Yeah, there are definitely, but like the common Italian nowadays, oh my God, they're so far from well dressed. If you want to see well dressed people, go to Switzerland.
That's okay, that man.
Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah,
we were talking about Italy.
Freeze.
Yeah. But I was also wondering, you talked a bit about sustainability
in
suits. How big of a problem is, because fashion goes when we talk about fashion, obviously one of the first questions you ask is, or the topics that comes to mind, is corporate social responsibility.
Yeah.
In how you produce it.
Yeah.
How big of an issue in the tailoring business is corporate social responsibility?
It's a big issue because there's a ton of waste in the fashion industry. Yeah. And that's why we've decided to only work with natural fabrics. So, for example, our shirts are all made out of Irish linen or Egyptian cotton. All of our suits, all our fabrics which we use, they're Scabal, Zegna, Loro Piana, they're all pretty sustainable brands. And we don't have overproduction, so we only make what we sell. We have two production lines. We have one in Morocco where we make all our clothing, and we have one in Spain where we make all our leather goods, like briefcases and shoes and stuff like that.
Are there some of your resources from Belgium as well?
No.
Because we have a large history in the textile industry.
Yeah, but it's dying. We have a lot of nice heritage.
Probably because the labor force is too expensive.
Yeah, the labor force is just too expensive. Like, if you look at our company, our cheapest suit starts at 814 euros. In a bespoke suit, you're spending around 80 hours working on a suit, which is an insane amount. If you have a Belgian tailor make a suit 80 hours at Belgian wages, you're spending 3,400 euros only on labor cost. So if you try to sell your cheapest suit at 814, well, yeah, I don't have to explain you, but that's impossible. Mm.
Did you feel any difference since Corona? Is there a higher or lesser demand?
Yeah, and also in the way that you deal with clients, right?
Yeah. It's
maybe the most difficult part is to do it in a COVID-proof way.
Yeah, I don't cuddle them, so that's a start. So with the lockdown, we're obviously not allowed to sell anything.
Okay. And concerning the question of Miklas, does it impact your business in any way?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, of course. Definitely. A lot of my business is based on people getting married. A lot of marriages are being cancelled because of Corona. A big part of my business is businessmen needing suits to go to work. Well, they're all working from home now, so they don't need suits anymore. Another big part of my customers is like your average plumber and electrician, and well, they don't have work either anymore. They can't work or they have less work. And like the dentists, for example, they had to close as well with the first wave, so they're not making any money anymore. So, well, they don't have money to spend anymore. So it infects our business very, very, very hard. But I think it infects everyone's business.
And I can then imagine also that you're selling less pants with all the Zoom business. Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. Sad but true.
And how old are you right now?
How old are you?
I'm 22.
22? Oh, my God. You sound 70. Well, that's a good thing. I'm 29. I'm turning 30 the 7th of December.
And when did you start your business?
1st of January 2017.
So what did you do in between?
Sales.
Okay.
Sales. I've always been in sales. Yeah. If you've had it, seen it, touched it, or smelled it, I've probably sold it.
What has been the most difficult thing for you to sell?
Nothing.
Honestly, nothing. Yeah, okay.
Honestly, nothing. Everything was...
Sell me this pen.
Well, I might just be able to do that, but you're already having one, so then we have a supply and demand problem. I might steal that from you, and then when you need to write something down, I'll conveniently be nearby with this pen. No, nothing is difficult to sell. Some people... I might have some difficulties with some people to gain their trust, but basically nothing is difficult. No, I'm going to stick to that answer. Nothing is difficult to sell.
What have you sold in the, what have been your different sales jobs?
everything. I've sold solar panels, I've sold insurances, I've sold water dispensers, I've sold alarm systems, I've sold cell phone contracts, I've sold everything.
Do you ever leave the room after selling something and then you realize, oh shit, I did a bad thing to that guy?
Mm. No, I never would. I never would, because there's a big rule in sales, and it is you can rip everybody off, but you can only do it once. And as soon as you rip somebody off or you make them a bad deal, what's going to happen? Not only, okay, you might have made some quick cash, but then you're going to lose this customer for life. And even worse, you're going to lose everyone attached to him. You're going to lose his entire network. So if you're sitting down with this big ass businessman and he wants to buy suits and he wants to spend, let's say, 10,000 euros, and I feel like I might rip him off and push him to buy more than he actually needs, and I might push him to buy for 70,000 euros, then I have an extra 60, which I've made now real quick. And then after a while, he will have been like, oh, well, this guy, he upsold me, he sold me too much, he sold me more than I need, and he's not going to be happy with what I did to him. So no way in hell is he going to recommend me to his network. So you just give them what they need, you keep them happy, and then their network will follow. And that's basically the most important thing. Like, we don't look for customers ever. Customers come to us. And I always ask them, like, how did you find us? And now lately, obviously, it's a lot because of the show. But most of the time it's just, well, I have this friend and he got married in a suit of you and he told me about the experience and blah, blah, blah. Most of it is still mouth to mouth.
How much momentum has a network like that of Jordan Belfort created in your business?
Oh my God, that's insane.
Yeah, I can imagine.
He knows everyone. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Bart. Oh my God, he smells my need for beer. You've seen the show, right?
Of Jordan Belfort?
No.
What do you mean? Young Wolves?
Young Wolves.
Yeah, sure.
So, Jordan, I met Jordan like 2 years ago. We got along great. We became good friends. And like about a year and a half ago, half year after we met, we were going out in a club in London together. And after that, we went to a casino. And in the casino, he introduced me to a friend of his. And this friend of his, that was Greg Secker. Greg Secker is best friend of Richard Branson. And so about 4 months later, I started going to Greg Secker's house to make suits for him. And he keeps introducing me to his friends, which all keep introducing me to their friends. So at the moment, we're at an insane amount of customers who all originated from Jordan. But it's basically the same with everyone. Just in his circles, the budgets are a little bit bigger.
Where do you get your inspiration to design different kind of suits? Or
I don't.
It's just the customer asks you.
I don't design anything. The customer decides everything. So we sit down together and we have a little chat about something as stupid as a sleeve, like how many buttons do you want on your sleeve? Do you want 2? Do you want 4? Do you want 3? Do you want 17? Do you want them stacked on each other? Do you want them touching? The customer decides everything. So we don't design anything. I'm not a designer. I'm also not a tailor, actually. I'm the owner of a clothing brand. But I like to call myself a tailor because it's easier and it sounds less cocky as, I'm the owner of a clothing brand. Nice to meet you. Yeah, you see? Yeah.
The spiritual father.
Yeah, the spiritual father. The founding father.
But you obviously do give suggestions, right?
I do give suggestions, yeah.
Because if someone designs something horrible, you're like, that's not going to work.
Well, it depends. Like, if somebody designs something ugly, then it's only going to be ugly in my opinion. So I'm going to let him have it. If he wants it, he can buy it. If somebody designs something which might negatively affect my company, like when it's like literally way over the top, let's say you want a velvet green blazer with a velvet yellow sleeve on the left and a purple and white striped sleeve on the right. I know when you're going to wear that, people are going to make fun of you. and are going to be like, where the hell did you get that suit? Yeah, and I don't want the answer to be Bordoni. I want the answer to be Bordoni when somebody asks somebody else, like, damn, nice suit. Where'd you get it? That's what we're going for. Mm-hmm. We want to dress people up, not make them look like clowns.
Do you think you are a big inspiration for young entrepreneurs?
Am I to you?
It might be. I don't know if I'm an entrepreneur, so I'm still studying. But
well, I don't know if I'm a big inspiration. I hope to be. If I've inspired one person to do something with his life which he wouldn't have otherwise, well, then I feel like I succeeded in life already. But I hope to be an inspiration. Doesn't everyone hope to be an inspiration?
Yeah,
I think I might. Yeah. I think I might if I look at all the messages I get on Instagram and on Facebook and on all this stuff. Well, yeah, I do believe I am.
I think maybe inspiring someone is a good. How do you say it? It confirms that what you're doing, which is with passion, has something of value.
Yeah.
I think that's the.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I stand by you.
Yeah. Okay. And do you have in the program, Young Wolven? We never gave this any framework, but it's a program that you maybe walk us through the when you decided and why to, or were you invited, or so how did you participate in the program?
I got this message on Instagram from a guy, Bram Bierkens is his name. Hey, Bram. And he asked me, like, hey, can I have your number? I'm going to give you a call, blah, blah, blah. So I texted him my number. And he came up with this proposition of a television show, and I was just like, ah, nope, not gonna do that. I'm not made for television. And I refused it actually a couple of times because I don't know why, just because I didn't really want to, I guess. But then with everything from COVID going down and all the businesses going south, basically, we decided, like, well, what's the worst that can happen? Might be that like 100,000 Belgian people think I'm an idiot. Well, so be it. So yeah, we just went with it, and the response was actually pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Way more than we could have ever anticipated.
And the point that I was coming to, your entrepreneur colleagues, to say so. Yeah. I assume you have made contact with them as well, or was it really independent filming and you never saw them?
I've met all of them.
Yeah, yeah. If you see like how they view themselves as young entrepreneurs, do you feel like you're different in the values that you uphold? Or
yeah, obviously everyone's different.
Yeah, but what I'm coming to, I had a feeling when I watched Young Wolven that some entrepreneurs would subscribe to the idea of the FIRE movement, if that rings a bell to you. The FIRE movement, which stands for financial independence, retire early. Which is make your wealth as fast as possible so that you can enjoy from it as long as possible afterwards.
No, I'm not like that because I don't care about wealth. Of course I do. Like, everybody wants to have a nice car. And if you've seen the show, you know I want to have a castle and I want to have zebras in my garden. So I do want financial, what was it? Insecurity?
Independence.
Yeah, insecurity. That's wrong. Yeah. Yeah, so obviously everybody wants that, I think. But to enjoy it, well, I am enjoying it. I'm loving what I'm doing. Literally, it sounds so cliche. I hate to say that. But I really love what I'm doing. So I am enjoying it now. And that's the thing. I believe you can't start a company based on making money. Because Steve Jobs said this before he passed. Rest in peace. He said, like, if you run a company, you won't believe how hard it is. Mm. It's so hard. People see me having a good time in London in the television show. What they don't see is me waking up every morning 365 days a year at 7 a.m. and me going to bed 365 days at 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. There's no holidays. I don't know what this Sunday thing is people keep talking about. I've never heard of a brunch or stuff like that. Mm. There's a lot of work involved. So if the thing you're doing is not your passion, you won't succeed. It's the same thing with owning a bar. Like, oh my God, you have an amazing life. You get to wake up in the afternoon. You get to drink beer for free all night. Yeah, and you're also working your ass off the entire night dealing with drunk people until 6 a.m. in the morning. So if you don't love it, then you're just going to quit. And what's going to happen? So you don't love it, you don't like it, it's not your passion. So you get annoyed at about 2 a.m., 3 a.m. So, okay, let's close the bar for tonight. And you're going to keep doing that. And eventually you're going to go bankrupt within a couple of months.
Did you give a lot up for being so passionate? Like a lot of friends you don't see anymore, stuff like that?
No, I didn't. Because I don't believe... There is this one thing I hate when people say that. Like, I'm sorry, I didn't do that. I didn't have time. I'm not a guy to curse. I don't like to curse, but I'm going to curse now. Fuck you. You did have time. Everybody has time. Like, when you ask somebody to do something and they're like, well, I didn't come through. I didn't come around it. I didn't have time to do it. And then like 7 minutes later, they ask you, have you seen the last Game of Thrones episode? Mm. Well, how did you have time to watch a Game of Thrones episodes of 60 minutes when you didn't do the 10-minute thing I asked you? So I didn't give anything up because I still make time for my friends. Let's say I'm in Ghent and I'm done with a meeting at 3 a.m. and I have my next meeting at 3:45. That means I have 45 minutes to spare. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to look for a friend who lives nearby who I haven't seen in a while. I'm going to jump in and say hi and have a coffee or a beer with him. So you can make time. Mm-hmm. If it's really important, you can make time.
Yeah, exactly. It often sounds like an excuse. Like if you're really honest, say I'm not interested. It doesn't. It's not streamlined with what I find important, mm-hmm. and I don't think my investment is worth
your
what you're
time.
Doing.
Yeah. No. So definitely, if you want to do something, you can do it. My best friend, for example, his name is Mo. I literally don't have time. I don't have time. I'm fully booked. I'll show you my schedule if you want. From the morning until midnight, every single day. Still, I still manage to see him at least 3 times a week. Because whenever I have a free moment, I make sure it works and we can see each other. Same thing with my girlfriend. I'm working all weekend, so I don't have time to see her, technically. So what do? In the morning, I just take her with me and I go to my customers with her. If I have a customer abroad, I take her with me. So there is no such thing as no time.
Mm. What was the decision-making process to make time for this?
Because it's extra exposure and because you guys were friendly on the phone.
Yeah, Baptiste talked to me a bit about the phone call. And that in the beginning it was like
we called.
It was like a tough pitch in the beginning. He said,
"What do you mean?"
I think Baptiste said that you asked how many views we have.
Yeah,
directly to the point. Is it worth my time? And then
yeah, obviously because it has to be worth my time, and I'm pretty straightforward with that because I have people calling me now to ask me if I can come to their birthday party of their 16-year-old son to come and say hi. Mm. And in the same moment of time, I have customers who want to order clothes to have them ready by Christmas. So yeah, obviously you need to prioritize. Like if this 14-year-old boy really wants to see me, well, I'm so happy. I'll make a funny video and send it to you on WhatsApp and you can show it to him on his birthday, and when things quiet down a little again, I'll come over, swing by and say hi. But I'm not gonna have a paying customer waiting for something like that. Mm-hmm. And this gives me extra exposure as well, so I'm brutally honest about that.
Yeah.
And then when you guys said it was happening in the Mbul with Bart, yeah, I was obviously sold. Like, include a brown bar in the pitch and I'm there, guys.
Thanks, Bart.
Mention the name. Dumbul.
We talked a bit about passion and how if you're not passionate, that it's very difficult to keep doing what you
do. No, that's not true. It's not very difficult. It's impossible.
Oh, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Okay,
go on.
Yeah, okay, good. What is the toughest spot you have been in pursuing Bordoni in making it the brand it is today, or you want it to become?
The toughest spot I've been in is when I first started. So I sold my first suit to a friend of mine. Lenny is his name. He owns a restaurant, and I sold him my first suit. And I was like, "Yeah, guys, we're popping. I'm in. I've made it." And then it took me another 3 months to sell me my second suit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I invested everything I had into this company because I really believed in it. And then at this one point, it seemed like it wasn't gonna work. And now, 4 years later, I'm at this point where if people want a meeting to buy a suit, we're 3 months fully booked. Like, there's no room within the next 3 months. It's all because of passion that it came to this. But the toughest spot was in the beginning, when it was all, when we were struggling and when it was really, really, really hard. And I was a young guy and there was no more money left. And then, okay, now what? Now, who the hell needs a suit? Please, somebody buy a suit. And it didn't happen. And then there was this one newspaper article which launched me off, and I think it was Atlas News which wrote it, and the head of the newspaper article was "From being homeless to selling luxury bespoke suits," and that gave me like a decent kickstart, but it wasn't enough yet. And then came Jordan, and then that gained a lot of momentum and a lot of media attention, and then it went really hard. And then came the television show, and now it's crazy.
Do you believe?
Yes, I do. Do you?
Yes, I do. Now, do you believe there are some other men, also maybe in Europe and Belgium?
There are other men
that are also doing what you are doing, and are also working that hard as that you are doing, but are
Definitely.
Not so successful.
Do you, that are also successful.
Do you admit or think there is a factor like luck in it?
That I think, yeah, that are not so successful. That was the point. Yeah.
Definitely, there is luck. There's luck in everything. If you walk on the sidewalk and you slip, you might break your neck or you might not. And if you don't, you were lucky. There's a lot of factors which. The thing I got through to Jordan, I messaged him on LinkedIn. He has like 3 people dealing with all his messages. If the guy who was reading through the messages, who read the message that I sent him, just got broken up to with his girlfriend earlier that day, he might not have passed this on to Jordan as, "Hey, I got this interesting message." If he didn't do that, Bordoni maybe might not be where it is today.
But you did send the message.
Yeah.
That's maybe the whole point.
Yeah, nothing works unless you do. But there is definitely some luck involved. Like, for example, the most horrible thing I've ever heard is, like, "Hey, I'm sorry, guys. I just want to tell you guys something real quick. I'm a self-made entrepreneur." I think that's horrible. Nobody's self-made. Like, the word self-made, like, please admit it, you got lucky, and there is luck, and of course you need a combination. You need like 27% of luck and 249% of insane hard work to get somewhere. But there is no such thing as self-made. Like, for me, for example, like, I wouldn't be where I am today without Jordan. I wouldn't be where I am today without Tom and Steve. I have 2 amazing business partners who believe in me, who trust me. And when I was out of money, they were there to invest in the company and to keep it going. And it's like, you're always getting something from people around you. It might be a talk you have with a friend at the bar when the friend very drunkenly says something really stupid, which if the next day you think about it, might be a good idea after all, and might have an actual impact on the future of your company. So yes, I do believe in luck, and no, I don't believe in self-made.
Mm-hmm. But it seems if you say, "I believe in luck," that is, that the misconception might be that you just wait for it to happen.
No, yeah. No. Like, let's say I'm bad at shooting, and I see a flock of pigeons flying by and I have a gun and I don't start shooting, then I'm 100% sure I'm not going to hit a pigeon. If I do start shooting, even though I have a terrible aim, I might get lucky and I might hit one. Less lucky for the pigeon, obviously. Mm-hmm. But you still need to put in the work. Don't wait around for it to happen, because it won't. Well, it's the same thing if you win the lottery. Well, then you're very lucky. But to win it, you first have to play it. Yeah. You have to buy a ticket. You have to go to the store. You have to work for it. And then, oh my God, it's so unfair. He's got so lucky. Well, he got lucky, but he worked for it. He tried. Let's have him his money.
That's also like the what do I have to lose attitude, right? What do I have to lose by just trying to shoot the pigeon? Maybe a bullet, but...
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, but...
If you're in a zombie apocalypse, it wouldn't be a good idea to waste a bullet on a pigeon, but... Yeah, you need to be willing to take some risks, definitely. Yeah. There is a lot of risk involved. Like, with me, the thing... So I have this amazing lady in our company. Her name is Anne, and she's the financial manager of Bordoni. So she manages all the money and the funds. And we were talking about starting Bespoke Jeans. And she believed in it like so bad. And I didn't, because I've never worn jeans. I've never liked jeans. And we took a leap of faith. And in my mind, I took a risk. She was like, no, it's definitely going to work. It's definitely going to work. Bespoke jeans, people are going to love it. I didn't really buy it, but I was like, well, let's take a risk. And we did take the risk, and we did invest a lot of money to get this started. It's not like if you, here's 500 euros, now we can start a bespoke jeans company. It doesn't work like that. It goes a little bit more money into that. And we did it, we took the risk, and now we can't even handle all the orders for bespoke jeans because it's going so insane.
Mm-hmm. Maybe as a finishing question, we have a lot of presumably students listening.
Mm-hmm. Hey, students, how are you?
Yeah.
Stop drinking. No, just kidding. Have another one.
Whilst sipping a beer.
Yeah. Cheers, guys.
No, but I was wondering, do you think anyone can be an entrepreneur? Speaking to your point of before, the link we made with. Having a go and what do we have to lose? Do you think that's a mindset that is lacking with a lot of students and that should be more on the minds of people?
No, I don't believe anyone can be an entrepreneur, and I don't believe anyone listening should try to be one. None of you guys should try to be an entrepreneur. None. To the ones listening which have a passion for anything, it might be knitting sweaters, just start building from your passion, and you'll become an entrepreneur out of an extension of what your passion is. But if you want to be an entrepreneur just to be an entrepreneur, it's not gonna work. That's my opinion. I might be so off on this. Maybe I just got so lucky after all. I don't know. I believe you shouldn't try to be. I believe this is a very serious issue, because I believe a lot of entrepreneurs are being glorified, but no successful entrepreneur that I know of started their company based on making money, but they started their company on what they liked doing. Like, you have Richard Branson, one of the biggest airlines in the world. He started with selling records out of his dorm room because he was a music addict, and it was called Virgin Records. That was his thing. Elon Musk, he was a computer geek. He loved programming and stuff like that. He had PayPal because that's what he loved. You have Jeff Bezos. He loved reading. Amazon was so far from what it is today. Amazon was no more than an online bookstore, because Jeff Bezos wanted people to read more books. Like, you need to start from your passion. You don't need to people are like, I want to be an entrepreneur so I can say I'm an entrepreneur. And no, just you do you, boo.
What if you don't have a passion?
Then don't start a company and wait for your passion to pop around. And if you don't have a passion, I don't think you're going to need a company to be happy. Because at the end of the day, you also don't want to be making millions of dollars and be fucking miserable in your bed. There are some people who just don't have the drive and who don't need this, who just want different things. They want to have a family, a beautiful cat, and an electric vacuum cleaner, and that's all they need. And the people who are like pursuing money and who don't really have a passion, well, I don't know, go in real estate or something. Go sell houses. Mm. You can make a lot of money there. Mm. That's my opinion, obviously. Sorry if I insulted anyone.
Tommaso Bordoni, thank you very much for this conversation.
You're welcome, guys.
Maybe tell people where they can follow you, where they can follow Bordoni.
Well, if you see me walking on the street, don't start creepingly following me. That's weird. But if you need a suit, a shirt, a blazer, a jeans, and anything, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and obviously on www.bordoni.be. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast with Tommaso Bordoni. We thought it was very interesting. We learned something about suits, about business, and about sailing stuff. We also really want to thank again Baptiste Vos for all the work he is putting in this podcast, and Paul De Pet for the music. See you next week, guys.